Welcome to Let's Talk About Obesity Care, a podcast series from Let's Go. The series is focused on thought-provoking and informative conversations to support medical providers interested in obesity prevention and treatment. I'm your host, Carrie Gordon, a pediatric nephrologist turned childhood obesity treatment physician. I am a clinical advisor to Let's Go, a childhood obesity prevention program of the Barbara Bush Children's Hospital, and a practicing specialist at Maine Medical Center's Weight and Wellness Program in lovely Portland, Maine. Today on Let's Talk About Obesity Care, we'll be discussing food insecurity and its connection to healthcare. Joining me are two wonderful women that I've had the great privilege to collaborate with over the last few years, who've really, they've been instrumental in advancing our food security for members in the health system here that we're working in. Laura Vinyl is the Community Health and Hunger Program Manager from the Good Shepherd Food Bank, and Emily Kane is a Program Manager in Prevention and Wellness from the Center for Health Improvement here at Maine Health. Hello, ladies. Great to have this time with you today.
Hi, Gary.
Thanks for having us.
Well, why don't we just jump right into some questions? I think I'll pick your brain first, Laura. I think it's good to start with definitions. How do we define food insecurity, and why would healthcare providers want to add this to their long list of things that we're supposed to be screening for?
Yeah, so food insecurity is defined as a lack of access to enough food to live a healthy, active lifestyle. And it's different from hunger because it encompasses both the consistent lack of enough calories in your diet and the ability to procure enough food that nourishes your body. There's a really strong connection between food insecurity and inadequate nutrition, which is to say that it's not uncommon to see someone that is receiving enough calories every day, but cannot afford and cannot regularly access healthier food items like fresh fruits and vegetables that we know are so important in your diet. And I think healthcare providers see the results of this type of imbalance every day. Patients are limiting their consumption of foods that we know that are important part of a healthy life because they can't afford it. So they're relying on lower cost, nutritionally deficient foods to meet their caloric needs and put food on the table for their families. And the cycle of not having consistent access to healthy foods and an over-reliance on heavily processed, low-cost foods can increase your risk of developing common obesity-related diseases like type 2 diabetes and hypertension. And we know that inadequate access to nutritious foods often makes it really hard to manage chronic disease, and that in food insecure households, individuals are often having to make choices between food and medical care. And having to delay medical care in order to have enough food on your table can lead to more serious medical interventions in the future. And I think healthcare providers really understand the implications of food insecurity and what that looks like in their patient population. And that adding a simple screening tool can help them identify patients that are at risk or already experiencing food insecurity. And it allows them to connect patients with resources in their community that can help prevent a lot of the health complications related to food insecurity and inadequate nutrition.
You know, Laura, when I started, getting involved with some of this work with you guys, one of the things that really surprised me was really the prevalence of food insecurity. And then some of the areas where you see it, where maybe you weren't expecting it, like, you know, how it can be really common in college students across the country, really. I don't know if you want to speak to that at all, prevalence or, those areas that we may be seeing more food insecurity than other areas.
Yeah. So at the food bank, we use the term meal gap to describe missing meals in Maine due to food insecurity. And we know that annually, the state of Maine has a meal gap of about 40 million meals. And that even with all the hard work from our food pantry network and our healthcare partners in our schools and the support of the federal nutrition programs like SNAP, that there's still about 8 million missing meals every year. And the good news is that the food is there. We just need to find a way to figure out how to get the food to the people that need it, which is why we're partnering with healthcare organizations like Maine Health to open up new distribution locations. And the need in Maine, we know that food insecurity does not discriminate, but it does disproportionately affect Black, Indigenous, and Latinx households. So what we're doing this year at the food bank is really renewing our commitment to serving those communities by investing to investing in efforts to source and distribute more culturally relevant foods and working with more community-led initiatives serving those type of vulnerable populations.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. You know, I've heard the definition of food insecurity kind of morphing a little bit over the last couple of years, like here and there when I hear people talking about it. You know, initially it was just access to food, and then it was access to healthy food. And now I'm starting to hear more, you know, access to culturally appropriate healthy food. And I think it's great to hear so many people in healthcare now start thinking about this and working on it. That kind of transitions me into a little question for you, Emily. Can you talk about how Maine Health has taken on food insecurity as a focus? There's so many different social determinants that we could have picked. Why do we pick food insecurity, and what type of things have we been doing?
Yes, thank you. So I was thinking about this question yesterday and listening to our pretty new CEO at Maine Health speak. And someone had asked him a question actually about social determinants of health. And he said, I just want to remind everyone, or if you weren't aware of this, Maine Health is really unique in our vision, which is working together so our communities are the healthiest in America. We talk about community health in our vision. How cool is that? And so I think he's worked at a number of healthcare organizations and seen that that's not always the case. And so I feel like food insecurity is really just a natural part of our continuum of care. And of course, I work for the Center for Health Improvement, so I see this as a natural part of the work that I do as well. It really started a few years back when we conducted our community health needs assessment. And when we looked at our communities across our entire service area of the hospital, of our healthcare system, social determinants of health came up as a priority everywhere. And when you looked at all the different social determinants of health, whether it was transportation or housing or others, food insecurity was really the number one concern. So I think for our work on our team, it seemed like a natural fit for us to take on this work. And so, Carrie, you've actually been involved since the very beginning. We developed a work group primarily made up of providers and really assessed what was going on across our system already around food insecurity. And what we found was there was some great work being done in terms of food insecurity screening and resource sharing, but it was really being done in pockets. There wasn't yet a system-wide initiative around food insecurity. And so our team sort of took that upon ourselves to develop, thankfully, with Laura and her team at the Community Health and Hunger Program at Good Shepherd Food Bank. I do not know where we would be today without Laura and her team supporting us, bringing in all of that food insecurity expertise, the poverty competency, and just knowing food and food distribution and how to get it from all these different places in the food pantry network. And so we were so thankful to be connected with the right people early on so that we could really develop this strong partnership that we have with Good Shepherd. So what we did that first year was actually Laura and then my great colleague, Gina McKinney, went out and trained all of our pediatric practices across the whole system on how to screen for food insecurity. Lucky for us, the two national evidence-based hunger vital sign screening questions were already embedded in our electronic health record. And so we were able to recommend to providers to utilize those two screening questions. And then, of course, because the first question providers ask when you say, could you please screen your patients for this is, what do I do if I get a positive response? We were able to say, well, we're partnering with Good Shepherd and here are all the resources that we have available for our patients, whether it's lists of available food pantries in communities that Good Shepherd updates on a regular basis that are now included in our electronic health record, to emergency food bags that we're able to purchase from Good Shepherd for our provider offices to have on site for patients and families who screen positive to be able to actually hand off a bag of healthy, 2 to 3 days of healthy food provided for that family. So again, for an emergency use. So that, and I will say one additional resource that we're able to provide from Maine Health is a referral to the patient assistance line, which is a MaineHealth run program through Access to Care. It's a fantastic resource that we highly recommend providers suggest their patients be referred to, because it's a team who will call the patient and provide them recommendations around food access resources. They can help a patient sign up for SNAP benefits, WIC benefits, but then they can also look at all those other social determinants of health that we know so often come with food insecurity, whether it's housing, medication access, transportation, and so on. And so we, I feel like we've got a really great network of resources within and outside of our system that we connect patients to. And then I'll just add that we got a lot of leadership support around our initial work. And so we actually developed a system-wide goal in our second year to expand to adult providers. And then just this last year, leadership was really interested in looking at how could we provide a more sustainable source of food for our patients. 2 to 3 days of food is great, but it's really, of course, not enough to sustain anything. And most of our practices aren't able to provide the fresh produce that we know is so important to health. So we actually were able to open up the two first hospital-based food pantries in Maine at Franklin Memorial Hospital and Stevens Memorial Hospital just this past summer. So really excited to have an additional resource in our system as well.
Well, I agree. It's the, you know, the leadership support around this has been just incredible. And when we first started, I don't know that we knew it was going to take off the way it has. And as you say, we're lucky to have the Good Shepherd, because it's not just about providing food, it's providing healthy food. And that's just been, you know, such a huge part of their mission. And you know, Laura, when you were speaking and talking a little bit about why healthcare providers should consider this to be a worthy issue, I would say that that is sort of the experience we've had, Emily, right? When we bring these screening tools out, you know, I can say I've had to do my fair share of screening. And there are times as a provider where you kind of feel like, oh, one more thing. But we didn't really have that experience with this. People seemed really, in general, once they knew there were resources, very gung-ho, didn't they, in your estimation, Emily?
I would agree, because I think for a while, people probably were very aware that their patients were facing food insecurity and just didn't have the resources to be able to help them. And so it's, I would imagine, as a provider, so much easier to ask someone about their, you know, their current food insecurity status, knowing that you've got bags of food in your closet and knowing that you have a patient assistance line, manager who is able to call the patient and support them in that way. So just so many more resources. And then, of course, everything that Good Shepherd can provide as well.
Yeah. You know, Laura, I've heard you speak so many times on talking to people about having food insecurity, and you brought up so many points that I wouldn't have necessarily thought of, like, you know, someone may have food insecurity, but as a parent may not want to admit they have food insecurity, wondering like, does that mean you feel like their kid wouldn't be safe with them? Or you've done a lot of these trainings. Are there do's and don'ts that we should be careful about when we're talking to our patients or when we're doing these screenings that can make us more successful at getting to the people that we can really help?
Yeah, absolutely. So we know food insecurity and hunger in general can be a very awkward conversation to bring up with patients, especially if you don't have a plan in place to respond to a need that presents itself. So what Good Shepherd does is we partner with, you know, over 130 organizations at this point to provide training on the connection between health and food insecurity and tips and tricks on how to screen patients in a really trauma-informed way. I would say if you're just starting to screen patients, I would definitely recommend familiarizing yourself and your staff with the causes of food insecurity, the negative health effects, kind of the context of why you want to start screening patients for food insecurity, as well as some basic statistics about food insecurity in your community. When we conduct trainings, we often hear feedback from providers and staff that didn't think that food insecurity really existed in their community and didn't realize how prevalent it was in Maine. And then once you do have a solid understanding of kind of what food insecurity is and the background, there are a few things you can do in your practice that have been shown to increase patient willingness to discuss their food insecurity status and other challenges that they might be facing outside of your office. So one of the most important things is to use a validated screening tool. We always recommend using the Hunger Vital Signs screening questions. It's just a very simple two-question survey that's been endorsed by the American Hospital Association and the American Academy of Pediatrics. When possible, you want to allow your patients to complete the screening questions on their own in a written or an electronic format. Data has shown that patients are more comfortable disclosing their food insecurity status via survey than having a medical professional ask them face-to-face. This is especially true in small communities where your medical assistant or whoever is rooming you might also be your neighbor or be on your child's PTA or, you know, might be a community member that you see on a day-to-day basis. And then be ready to provide assistance if someone does reach out for help. The last thing you want to do is to have someone open up to you about the challenges they're facing and then have nothing to offer them. We want patients to know why you're asking them these questions, and we even encourage providers to tell patients why you're asking them the question. You know, we're asking you these questions because we have resources available. We know this is a really big concern in our community, and we just want to make sure that you're connected to everything that you need. And then at Good Shepherd, we encourage what we call universal screening. So screening everyone that comes into your office for care. And you can, of course, choose to screen like a subset of patients, like everyone that's coming in for a well child check or an annual visit. But it's really important for patients to know that this is just a part of your like check-in process or your rooming process, that everyone is being asked these questions so they don't feel like they're being singled out because of something you know about them or what they're wearing or what they're driving or some other external factor.
That's so helpful. Thanks, Laura. You are always so eloquent when you talk about this stuff and think about things in such a practical way. I think that's great. We've really struggled in our clinic with trying to figure out how to do things written, you know, with the pandemic, we're like not handing things back and forth. And, you know, but that makes a lot of sense. You know, I know in general, when a tool is validated in one methodology, doesn't necessarily, you know, mean it's validated for other methodologies. And that would make sense to me why it would be easier to check it off than to actually, you know, look at your neighbor and say, yeah, I have food insecurity. You know, for me in my clinic, it's interesting. The more I've worked in this area and the more comfortable I've gotten with it, I've just had so many more open conversations with patients. You know, they'll come in kind of knowing I'm comfortable talking about it. And when you're working in an obesity clinic and talking about food as much as I do, people sort of expect you to talk about food in my clinic. It's been just incredibly helpful to have some of these new resources that we've been working on, or access to the resources, or having them as smart phrases and having the patient assistance line. You both of you probably speak with lots of healthcare providers, you know, getting who've been, you know, delving into this more with their patients. And have you had any examples of feedback where you've heard good patient success stories or other providers having just really positive experiences that you feel like sharing, either of you?
Sure. I was going to say, I can just share some feedback that we've gotten from some of our healthcare partners. So our team often hears feedback from partners that are just really completely surprised by how many of their patients are screening for food insecurity, and just how grateful the patients are to have resources available to them. One of the most powerful examples we have that I can really think of comes from one of our hospital partners, where their dietetic team encountered an older patient that had uncontrolled diabetes. They had an A1C of 14%. And they screened the patient for food insecurity, and they learned that this person was only really eating one meal a day because they were unaware of any other resources that could really help them out. They were living on a limited budget. They didn't know about the local food pantries or any of the federal programs that they qualified for. So the hospital really quickly connected that person with the local food pantry, got them signed up for the federal nutrition program that they were eligible for, and kind of sent them on their way. And then a few months later, the patient came back for an unrelated issue. They were screened again. Their A1C was tested again, and it had leveled out at about 7%, which is a really amazing drop. And when they asked the patient kind of what their experience was, they said that after their initial visit with the dietitians, they were able to connect with the food pantry and they were going there every week. And then the food pantry was able to get them signed up for a federal program that provided them with shelf-stable groceries every 2 weeks. So they were able to go from eating one meal a week or one meal a day to 3 meals a day, which really helped them kind of stabilize their health.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine how you'd handle having diabetes. I mean, if you don't know you're going to have access to food, do you give yourself your insulin? Do you not? I mean, it's
exactly
awful. Yeah. And Emily, did you want to share some experiences or feedback you've gotten from providers?
Sure. I would say just building on what you said earlier, Carrie, I was just thinking about one of our practices and we look at their data and hear from them. They've got such high rates of screening their patients for food insecurity. And of those patients, a high rate of patients who are screening positive. And then of those patients who screen positive, a high rate of patients who are accepting resources, whether it's the food bags or a connection to the patient assistance line. And when you talk to them, we met with their MAs and their nurses and some of their providers. It's all about that, just sort of destigmatizing the conversation and normalizing it. And Carrie, the example you gave was perfect. Just your patients knowing that you're open to that conversation and that you might have a resource, I think opens them up to being willing to talk about it. And then that just, you know, continues on. And I think spreads across the practice, at least that's what they've seen. And so, you know, when I spoke with one MA and she was saying, I just have a really laid back conversation with the patient. Like, everyone's facing food insecurity at some point. Today it might be you, tomorrow it might be your neighbor. We've got these resources. There's plenty for everyone. Why don't you just take some? Sort of, you know, just like it's totally acceptable to take some food home with you or to use one of these resources. So so I just think that's sort of telling of how important it is to just normalize it as much as possible, because as Laura shared with the data, so many of our community members are facing food insecurity at one point or another. So we just need to be able to offer everybody the resources that they need. I'll also add, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
I was just going to add, I did reach out to, I mentioned that we were able to open these two hospital-based food pantries. So I did reach out to one of our pantry managers to just say, what stories are you hearing from the patients that are coming in? And she shared one quote from a client that I thought I would share with you. She said, I'm so happy the food pantry is available to me. I've lost a lot of weight over the last year and I feel really good and want to continue. She went on to say, I've always felt silly saying no to certain foods that were given to me at other pantries. So I would just take the whole box, but I feel that's wasteful. Here at this pantry, I'm able to continue my weight loss journey with the fresh produce and healthier food choices. I'm not being wasteful and I feel very supported. So I think that was kind of nice just to hear. Obviously, many food pantries are doing their best. They are being run with volunteers. They're open one day a month. I mean, the challenges are numerous. And so we feel very lucky that at our hospital-based food pantries, we're able to order primarily just healthy food and a ton of produce. And so people are noticing when they're coming, clients are coming to these pantries, that they're able to really get the food that's most nourishing for their bodies. So it was great to hear that feedback.
Yeah. Oh, I love that story. And you know, you're right. You can imagine how even when you're running a pantry, if someone's coming to you with donations, it's really hard to say no to anybody who's donating something, you know, but when you're at a hospital pantry, when people realize we're serving people who have health problems and we don't want to make them sicker. That's our goal, is to make them healthier. So, you know, and with the pandemic and just how it's impacted health, you know, I think this is just, it's become even more pressing. And we, of course, started all this work before then. Laura, do you want to talk a little bit about how the pandemic has impacted sort of the food security programming in Maine, or, you know, their rates of food insecurity? I'm sure, you know, we've all been so upended. I'm sure that, you know, food pantries are, you know, they had to change everything.
Yeah, absolutely. So we know, like at the beginning of the pandemic, their national food insecurity rates were expected to skyrocket. And in Maine, we actually did see the biggest increase in food insecurity since the Great Recession in 2008. But our partner network of food pantries and schools and health care centers was able to distribute almost 32 million meals last year, which is about 30% more than they were distributing the previous year. And we're really fortunate that our healthcare partners were largely able to continually operate their programs even through COVID-19. And they distributed about 77% more food in 2020 than they did in 2019. But we know that that's not enough. Feeding America is still estimating that about 15,000 Mainers will experience food insecurity in 2021 as a result of the ongoing pandemic. So we know that we need to continue to invest in our network of partners and find new avenues to reach folks that may not be served or are being underserved by our current network. I will say in like kind of the broader scheme of things, the good news is that many of the emergency measures that Congress passed last year to support families through the pandemic did have a significant effect on the level of need within the communities. So we are able to avoid kind of catastrophic rates of food insecurity thanks to the expansions of like the SNAP program and the school nutrition programs and like the pandemic EBT program. Maine was also one of the first states to pass a universal school meals program, which will require all schools to provide free meals for students starting in 2022. So we're really hopeful that the expansion of these programs and the recent reevaluation of SNAP benefits, which resulted in like higher benefit amounts that are more in line with current food prices, help stabilize the lives of more Mainers and mean that there's less reliance on the emergency food system.
Yeah, I did see a lot of families for the patients that I take care of in clinic who were taking advantage of getting those school meals, even when the kids were on the days where they were schooling at home. And I think that type of support had obviously was so helpful for so many people. Why don't I ask you this, Emily? What would you like to see? Where would you like to see the work headed? What gaps do you think we have to work towards filling?
Yes. So I think one area I'm personally really interested in, and I think many of us are, is just to be able to demonstrate some positive health outcomes from this work and return on investment. Laura and I have had many conversations about this. I believe Good Shepherd's also interested, and Carrie, I'm sure you are too. We know that there's a number of really amazing models nationally that would be amazing to replicate here in Maine. One we've been talking about recently is the Geisinger's fresh food pharmacy model. They've demonstrated a significant reduction in the patients that they that go through the program who have both food insecurity and diabetes. They're able to demonstrate a significant reduction in their hemoglobin A1C levels when the patients are enrolled in a diabetes self-management class, when they do some nutrition education, and when they receive food on a weekly basis. I believe it's, I think it's two meals a day for 5 days a week. They receive food to cook, healthy food to cook, that is in line with their dietary needs based on their disease state. So would love to replicate something like that here. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I do feel that with all the different programs nationally trying to start gathering some data, it'll be a matter of time probably before we start to see a little bit more support from the insurers for this type of work. You know, when you can keep people out of the hospital if they have, you know, more likely to if they have had healthy food, you know, it's a lot less expensive than a bounce back hospitalization for sure. So I guess maybe one last question. I don't want to, we probably need to start wrapping this up, although I'm sure we could talk for hours. For providers that want to learn more, either inside or outside of the Maine health system, are there any resources that we direct them to? I mean, I use the Good Shepherd Food Bank website a lot. They have, you know, you can search by zip code for stuff in Maine area, you know, access to pantries in Maine, or what are some other Share Our Strength, maybe Cooking Matters, any other websites, Laura, that you think, or resources that people, if they're looking for more information, that they could use?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, folks can find information about our programming and how to connect with our team through the Good Shepherd website, which is feedingmaine.org. You can find more information about screening and best practices around screening through Children's Health Watch. They have a national community practice focused on the hunger vital signs, and they do a lot of work nationally around screening and best practices and connecting folks to resources. I'd also recommend looking at Feeding America. They have a lot of great data about food insecurity and the gaps in services across the country, as well as a lot of great information around the like percentage of folks that are food insecure but still do not qualify for federal nutrition programs because of income eligibility guidelines, which I think is always really important to highlight. And then of course, you know, Emily and her team, if their Maine health practices are always a great resource.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you said that. And, you know, Emily has got some other, I know you have some other projects we didn't get a chance to talk about today, like some practices that have raised garden beds, and some practices have some pop-up fresh produce. And you guys have been very creative and really testing lots of different things. I think it's wonderful.
Thanks, Carrie. And if anyone's interested in any of that work or those hospital-based food pantries that I mentioned, you can check out mainehealth.org/foodinsecurity. And there's more information on our webpage there.
Well, thanks so much. Thanks again for joining me today, for all the work you guys are doing to improve food security in our patients in Maine. You're the best.
Thanks, Carrie.
Thanks, Carrie.
Thanks for listening to Let's Talk About Obesity Care. You can find all of our episodes on your podcast app and on our webpage, letsgo.org. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, we'd really love to hear from you. Please email us at info@letsgo.org. Let's Talk About Obesity Care is produced by Let's Go, with technical support from Maine Health Educational Services. Thanks so much for joining us.